From the RunnersWarehouse.com studios, TomBernardShow.com, part two with...
Catherine Brandt.
Andy Brandt Bernard.
Mike Rasmussen.
Brittany Hagen.
Kermit Appeal.
Kermit Appeal's with us. I have so much fun talking to you. And it was weird to talk to you on a Wednesday, though.
Oh, it was.
On the KQ mornings.
Why is it weird?
Well, because they said he's there tonight, tomorrow night, and Saturday night. No, I'm there tonight, tomorrow night, Friday, and Saturday night.
There we go.
So I was like, I forgot it was a Wednesday. But in any case, we'll be back in 90 seconds. Kermit is in studio. Love talking to Kermit. We will be back in 90 seconds. More of the TomBernardShow.com.
Oh, whoops.
Hi, Tom here for my friends at Renter's Warehouse. Are you considering a move soon? Need to relocate, combine households, or just don't want to pay your mortgage anymore? Forget the hassle of selling your home. Why risk getting less than your asking price? Find out what your home will rent for instead. Renter's Warehouse can help you perfectly price your property and rent out your home easy, fast, and worry-free in just 17 days on average. And for only $80 a month, their professional landlords will manage your property 24/7, including rent collection, maintenance, inspections, tax paperwork, and more. They'll even warranty your renters for up to 9 months, meaning if for any reason the tenant doesn't stay, Renter's Warehouse will replace that tenant for free. There are no upfront fees, no binding contracts, and you can cancel at any time. It sounds like a great deal because it is. Go to RentersWarehouse.com right now for a free rental price analysis to see what your home will rent for today. Call 952-470-8888. Again, 952-470-8888 or visit RentersWarehouse.com. Renters Warehouse, the professional landlords. Dougie, what's new at Walzer?
I was reading this article in Edmunds about car shopping. Take a look.
Okay. Americans hate car shopping so much they'd rather give up sex and do taxes.
Yeah, it gets better.
What's ridiculous, though, is just how many people hate the haggle. 1 in 5 said they'd willingly give up sex for a month rather than haggle for a new car. Another 44% said they'd be willing to give up Facebook.
Read on, Sir Tom.
Even more worrying, though, are the number of people that would simply prefer to avoid the car buying experience altogether. 1 in 3 people surveyed said they'd rather do taxes, go to the DMV, or sit in an airplane's middle seat.
Tom, this is the reason that Walzer does business differently. We've been hassle and haggle free for over 10 years, and people love it. Great pricing online, in the store, every single car, every single day.
And you don't have to give up Facebook?
Nope. In fact, I'd like you to read our new slogan from our brand new marketing department.
Okay. Here goes. Don't give up sex. Buy from Walzer and save the haggling for home.
What do you think?
Slight improvement over the old marketing department.
Yeah.
No question about it. TomBernardShow.com.
What?
Andy's hosting.
Yep.
Why did we start the show and he left?
I don't know. He got a phone call.
Oh, well, Kermit, take over. Tell us about yourself.
Oh, hi. Good to be here on the show I've never been on. That's. Well, I'm glad to be here, though. That's nice.
Do you come to Acme every year? Or?
About every year. Between a year and a year and a half is about what the rotation of the headliners is.
I'm trying to think if we, have you been on the podcast before?
I have not. This is my first time on the podcast.
That's weird.
Maybe that's why Tom left.
No.
No, it was my first time on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've done the radio show, but yeah, it's the first time. I'm excited.
Well, good. Have you ever done, do you do podcasts very often?
I do. It's, although it's really bizarre to think, like, you know, when you're the only guest, like there's a host and just you, you kind of wonder, do I have anything to say in an hour? That's a lot of time to be talking about me. You know, it's a weird feeling. I mean, I understand that my job is different. The most, you know, comedy is a weird job, and with it comes the stories and how different it is. But it always baffles me that anybody wants to, you know, interview me for that long, you know, to hear what I have to say.
Well, in general, we meander in and out of knowing what we're talking about half the time.
Right. See, this is great. I like, you know, there's other people to talk to. It's meandering, and I love meandering.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So that's. But it's just you and another person. You just kind of feel like, well, that's a lot of focus on what I have to say.
Yeah. How long have you been a comedian?
But what kind of comedian is that? I don't like when people listen to what I have to say. That's weird.
Except
that's
when I'm on stage. Yeah. When I'm ready for it. Yeah. Right.
How low self-esteem is that? I'm a comedian. Stop listening to everything I talk about.
I'm going
to
turn the mic off now and stare at you.
Do you find, though, when you're on stage, though, you've got this personality all ironed out and you've got your material all straightened away, and then, I mean, now you have to just be you. Is it a little bit more intimidating?
Well, But what I do for me specifically, what I do is an extension of kind of who I am. You know, my act is sort of talking about my life. So it's not that different. You know what I mean? Essentially.
But it's still a little rehearsed, right? I mean, it kind of has to be.
Yes,
so
yes.
So you have
Right. And so that part is different. But luckily for me, like some comics do kind of a character. They do kind of – or a really exaggerated extension of who they are.
Right.
And, but mine isn't. Mine is almost feels like in certain instances that it's, we're having a conversation at a dinner table. That's kind of how I design what I do. So yeah, this isn't too far away. But you're right. I mean, in talking, I'm not doing jokes. But I've been at it long enough to understand where the humor comes from and how it manifests itself. So that even if we're just kind of talking about a topic that I don't talk about in the show – I can kind of present it in a way, hopefully, that has some humor or at least has a sense of consistency to who I am.
Right.
You know, does that make any sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It totally makes sense. Mike over here is a comedian as well.
Yes. Well, yes. I try to be.
Yeah.
When it works, it's comedy.
Yes, that's right.
Otherwise, it's tragedy.
Either way, I'm sure it's fun to watch.
Very Macbeth all the time.
Yeah. You pull out a skull.
There's a fine line between comedy and like slam poetry.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
I was just presenting some ideas, people.
Have you liked visiting Minnesota then?
I love visiting Minnesota.
Very cool.
Well, Minneapolis is a great city. You know, I live in Seattle, and they're very sort of similar in entertainment in general. The music scene, the theater scene really reminds me of Seattle a lot. And it's a beautiful city, especially today. Like I'm rarely
gorgeous,
here in June,
yeah.
and just what a gorgeous city.
And you said you took the
Nice Ride bikes. Yeah.
Nice Ride, which is such a great Minnesota name. It's such a nice ride.
Yes. Oh, you want to go on a nice ride?
Well, it is. You know, it's a great name because hey, you have $6. Take my bike for a while. That is very nice. You know what I mean? Like, and for $6, I get to go and ride around and see the city, and it's beautiful, and yes, and everybody is very nice. I love that here. And
Did you grab one right out here?
Yeah, right out here, and I went riding for about an hour.
Yeah, there's a bike rack
right across the parking lot. Yeah. It's a really interesting way to see a city by bike. You can see, you just feel like you get to know it a lot better because you're really on the ground. Like, you're not in a car just driving by looking out, and you're like experiencing it kind of.
And I love that there's not like one main bike trail. There were actually many places where
you could totally get lost. You could
go so
far out west. You can't even imagine. Tom used to ride his bike a ton.
Before I was working 16 hours a day.
How many miles did you log in a day?
At least 25.
Yeah.
Wow.
I can't wait to get to we just took over a couple of businesses, and I've been running around like a madman.
Well, I'm a comedian that works an hour a day, so I had...
That's great. That's just great. About the same thing. It's about the same story. No question. So, sorry about it. I was a little late there. As a matter of fact, it was about the other businesses. I had to take this phone call from... It was Min West about the encrypted emails. A lot of financial institutions if they're going to send you...
encrypted shit.
If it has any dollar figure in the email at all, it has to be encrypted.
Oh, wow.
Doesn't matter. If they send you something about for $6, it has to be encrypted.
Wow. Or if you're trying to do one of the things where you hide a swear word and you just, you know what I mean? People, they put the S and then if one of them's a dollar sign, they have to.
Yes.
And some computers won't open it and you might not have the right. It's just so annoying.
Well, see, that's the problem. Is my computer at home. I do the morning show from my house, as you know, and I have this unbelievable firewall that lets nothing get through. So they're doing it on their end, and it won't come through my end. I'm like, oh my god! So that's why I had to talk to him on a Friday and say, we got to take it. Oh, did he really? Well, spray.
I did.
Oh, the worst farts ever.
Sorry.
Oh yeah, flag it at our guest.
From here, you can't see the dog.
Is it better?
So it's like, what do you see? You
smell?
We'll just have to. Well, I want to mention.
Did you get the Febreze? Did you get the Febreze or the fart? Which one did you get? Anything? Okay, good.
God. All right,
good.
That was really good, honey.
Well, all of a sudden I'm like, la la la. Oh my god.
That's so funny.
I'm gonna die.
I love how there's protocol.
Did you guys talk about Bar La Grasso while I was gone?
No, we did not.
Kermit mentioned that he went to have dinner.
Oh, you did.
Yeah.
Did you have the soft eggs and lobster?
I did have that.
Oh my god. Yes. That was one of the best things on the planet.
That was unbelievable, and I was there with Louis, and you know how you try and be kind of polite. We split it in half, and then we sort of took a piece and everything. And he left like a good chunk there, and that was kind of his. I took my half, and after a while, I go, "Hey, can I polish that thing off there?"
Yeah, not gonna leave that, are you? God,
the food is so good there that I was rude.
I was rude. Now, see, that I know is not true, and I've always wanted to ask you this. How can you be in the business you're in? You're one of the nicest people I've ever met. How is that possible?
People say that, which, it's
a nice thing. It's all an act. No, just kidding.
Yeah. It's not true
great
in the
publicist.
Least.
What?
Yeah, that's right. You're a great publicist.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a really nice compliment, and I appreciate that. But, there are a lot of nice comedians, a lot of nice people.
There are, actually. But, you are a genuinely, gentle, nice man. You just are. It's great.
That's very nice. Somewhere between being Hawaiian and incredibly low self-esteem. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's great.
You know what I mean? Like Hawaiians are mellow anyway, and yep. Hawaiians are generally yeah. pretty nice. But then when you also don't believe that anything should go your way, you don't fight anything. You just gotta.
why would you believe that though?
Like I said, it's a low self-esteem thing.
But why? Where'd you get that?
I'm not sure. That's hard to explain. I'm not really positive. It's always been kind of my thing,
Really?
Yeah.
Just low self-esteem. Did you know the people who do the best on academic tests have low self-esteem?
Really?
They do. Absolutely.
I didn't know that.
People who have a generally wonderful opinion of themselves score very low on testing because they just think, well, I'm wonderful, so I'll just write down whatever I feel like. Whereas a person with low self-esteem will try their hardest to get the question answered correctly.
Right.
It's very cool.
Right.
I mean, it makes sense.
And equating that to comedy, there's a sense that, as comics, we're always trying to get better, to succeed, and to get to the next – whatever the next level is, right? But ultimately – and I think – I know I'm not alone in this. I think for many of us, we're just so worried that it's going to end tomorrow.
We're so worried that
I may not get this gig again, that Acme, literally my favorite comedy club in the country.
Phenomenal.
The idea that this wouldn't be on the schedule just motivates me to write another joke, right? So it's not that I'm hoping to get a show or a sitcom or anything. I am just hoping not to do this. You know what I mean?
But don't you?
Except for Dave Mordahl. He hopes the opposite.
Yeah, he hopes
the opposite.
God,
I don't know
why. Show.
He sure does.
Well, I was in a car with him, honest guy, all day yesterday and all day today. And being in a car with Mordahl, it's like, oh, my God.
Yes.
It's
just unbelievable. Did you have to stop every 5 seconds so he could smoke?
I got to pee. No, he didn't smoke at all, but he had to pee like 15 times on a one-hour drive.
I have no idea.
How did he go without smoking first?
He probably had like 14 nicotine patches.
He probably did. It's true. But honestly, it's so great because during the show you could hear it and all the rest of it. But he'll be going, so anyway, that's like, God. That's really
pack.
Good. Now, moving on from just the last thing I'll say about it, North Dakota, unless I'm sure it was when Brittany still lived there, has the highest test scores in the nation as a state and the lowest self-esteem per individual.
Wow. How do they know that?
Because all the testing and the studies and all those things. Yeah,
I feel like I have a hard time
knowing. I might have an idea. I feel like meth has taken some of the lower ends out of the equation.
Just take them out.
Yeah.
I like
we need
that.
A good dose of meth here on here.
I like this. Just, so basically it was like alcohol for new, like to this day in some place, like place in the Middle East where drinking is not allowed, if people do drink, it kills them.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because that's their genetics are not set up to accept alcohol.
Wow.
So you go start drinking alcohol, it will kill you.
Like Inuits are the same way.
Inuits are the same way, yes.
They
exactly.
didn't have grains to ferment ever. They've all been living off like meat and stuff like that. So
absolutely.
All of a sudden, booze.
If you don't have the correct enzymes, what happens is your liver turns it into
a fatty liver.
Well, yes.
Good old fatty liver.
And a close relative of formaldehyde.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
There's actually a pill out there, a stop drinking pill that removes your body's ability to eliminate that compound.
Ooh.
So they give that to alcoholics, and if they drink, basically their blood just gets flooded with formaldehyde, and they end up feeling pretty bad.
Oh, that's anabuse, isn't it?
Yes. Anabuse,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm so glad that I never got to the point with alcohol. It's like, I have to have it or I can't breathe. That's not good.
Yeah, right. That's, right. yeah. That's crazy.
And abuse.
With Koreans, is it just red wine or is it alcohol too?
It's any alcohol. They just have a low amount of...
Because Faith said that she can't drink more than a glass of wine without getting sick.
Yeah, that's the aldehyde dehydrogenase that they don't have.
A lot of Asians can't drink alcohol.
Yeah, the alcohol... I met a guy... the alcohol gets turned into the aldehyde,
right.
Which then in most people gets turned into... I don't know what it is, but it's something harmless. But in Asians, it stays as that aldehyde, which causes the flushing and nausea and hangover.
That's why exactly God invented opium.
John. There you go. Yep. John Everyone needs a release. No.
John was a guy that came down to see the morning show down at Treasure Island, and nicest guy in the world. His mother's Japanese, and he cannot drink alcohol.
No, a lot
it makes him really, really sick. He said, I've never been through any of this stuff because I drank alcohol one time and it made me so unbelievably ill that I just never drank it again.
Yeah, apparently that feeling that the aldehyde gives you when you can't eliminate it, it's just the worst.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
Just the nicest guy in the world.
Gets sick.
Well, it's like that's what causes a big part of what causes hangovers. So,
yeah.
Like, you know, just imagine a hangover except it's immediately after you drink and it's 10 times worse.
You just have to party so quick.
Yes, that's exactly
you just have to drink and then go into a coma
minutes.
For 3 days.
Listen to the Love Happy Hour with Kaylin Rosenberg, the love architect, author, celebrity matchmaker, and renowned relationship expert, along with producer Kelly Guest every Friday live at thelovehappyhour.com on demand on iTunes or on YouTube. The Love Happy Hour weekly on the Tom Bernard Network. We'll take a 90-second break. Kermit Apio is with us. He is at Acme tonight. Now, I know it's tonight and tomorrow.
Yes, it is.
Because it's Friday. Now I got that. Kermit's with us, and we'll be back in 90 seconds on the TomBernardShow.com. I have a good reason to be talking today to Mike Bryant of the law firm of Bradshaw & Bryant.
Other than I'm one of the nicest people you know.
Well, that too. Now, today I need some legal advice.
I'll do my best. We always do our best for all of our clients.
Okay, here's my problem. I think I have a libel case for you to handle.
Okay, give me the facts.
Okay, the facts are I've been accused of being a bigoted, racist asshole.
Okay. I think a jury would be convinced, based on your statement, that there is no place for racism, that you hired the first black co-host for a radio show in the market, and that you grew up in North Minneapolis, that you couldn't, by any stretch of the imagination, be guilty of racism.
Well, thank you for that.
Easy money for Bradshaw & Bryant. The facts show the person was uttering the canard, had libeled you, defamed you, and damaged your reputation.
And he also called me an asshole. What can you do for me there?
Honestly?
Well, yeah, of course.
In libel, truth is an affirmative defense.
You mean if I am an asshole and he calls me an asshole, I have no complaint?
I'm just saying.
Tommy Mischke and Tom Bernard from Midwest Fence. Todd's in studio. You gave him a call, said, come on down.
Good to have a guy from Midwest Fence here. I did ads for Midwest Fence for years when I was on the radio, and you guys have quite a sweet deal going right now if you get a fence this spring.
Yeah, we have a couple deals going right now. We'll give you a $250 off your fence for a minimum purchase, no interest, no payments for 12 months, no monthly payment if you pay it off within the first 12 months. We also have a very popular cash up front, 5% off. If you pay for that fence when you purchase it in full, we will give you an additional 5% off.
So you get a fence this May. You don't have to pay for it till May 2015. No interest.
Correct.
Gotta love that. God.
Now we're talking.
Midwest Fence, serving the metro and beyond. See us online at MidwestFence.com. That's MidwestFence.com for $250 off any fence project.
Thank you very much. Tommy Mischke, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be uploading a new show on Sunday night on the Tom Bernard Podcast Network.
And
Tommy.
Endorsed by Rusty.
Endorsed by Rusty. Yeah. Kate and me, that's exactly. Yes, exactly. I know we've talked about this before, but for new podcast listeners, you grew up in Hawaii.
Yes.
Lucky
And
dog.
Where in Hawaii?
I grew up on the island of Oahu.
Oahu.
Yeah, the west side of Oahu.
The west side. And that's...
How do you get anything done living there?
You
I mean,
don't.
It's always nice.
You
All
don't.
You want to do is go stare at the beach and the
That's
whales.
It. You
right?
don't. I mean, yeah. You know, there's. The,
I would
people
get
always
nothing
say,
done.
Yeah. I mean, people say Hawaiians are always late, but really, what's your rush? You know, what I mean, the beach is to your right as you're on your way to work.
Right.
I mean, it is.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. It really. People are very relaxed and can't wait to just kind of go hang out and drink a beer and hang out by the beach. It's really. My brother-in-law is a lifeguard. And you know what he does on his days off? He goes to the beach. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, you would think he'd get sick of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just loves it. Yeah. So it is a great place to grow up. It really gives you a perspective of life. There was a comedy agent who she went out there for a vacation, and it was so funny because she gets to the airport, the tour company's not there. She gets her bag. All right, not there. She goes out to the curb, not there. There's a bunch of people standing at the curb as all the cars start to leave, and they realize they're with the same tour. The guy comes in about 15 minutes later. Hey, everybody. Starts loading their suitcases. Get in the car. And no apology for why he's late. No,
yeah, they're
nothing.
All sniffy just, because
right,
they're
right.
Not,
and
yeah.
He's like, hey, well, welcome, you know. And so the next few days is this process of she asking him, so what time are we going to have breakfast? Oh, when you guys get up, come have some breakfast. And then what time are we going to the one thing, whatever tour they're doing that day? You know, after breakfast, we'll just go. And it was there was this battle where she was trying to get what time we're doing things, and he would never give a time. He was not going to give her a time. It was just like, yeah, when you guys eat, then we'll meet up. We'll go hang out. And so when I called her, I said, hey, how was your trip? She goes, you know, it really wasn't my bag, but I will say I learned a lot about you.
You know? Well, there he is. Yeah.
So she said, when I realized when you take 2 days or 3 days to reply to an email, you're actually earlier than your family would be.
Growing up in Hawaii, how are the audiences for stand-up? I mean, other than the tourists, the locals at live comedy, do they just sit back and go, hey, that was funny?
Yeah, it's
that's good.
It's well, I started comedy in Seattle, so because there's not much of a comedy scene there. It's growing, like they're kind of getting it going. But the problem is that the tourist audience and the local audience are two very different audiences.
Yeah.
So you can't market them together.
No.
You have to do separate.
That's true.
And the local audiences, you know, are good, but the humor, and I don't know if you guys know this, the humor in Hawaii is very race based, right? Because there's so many different races there.
Yes.
And they brought people from all these different countries to work on the sugarcane fields. So the main language you had to learn was English because that's what the bosses spoke. But there's all these different languages and everything. And so there were all these people in these big, huge warehouse things where they stayed. And then they'd get up in the morning and work in the sugarcane fields. Well, one of the things they did to pass time was they would tease each other along racial lines.
Right.
They'd make jokes.
Right.
And that has sort of survived in Hawaii. So some people, when they go and see Hawaiian comics, they think, wow, this is really kind of racist. You know? But it's really how the humor has evolved. So yeah, I mean, it's funny because you'll be watching a comedian making a joke about how Filipinos eat dog, right? And people who aren't from Hawaii are just like, oh, is there going to be a fight in this room? You know,
that's very funny.
So it is. So it's a very different humor. You can't market one to the other. So it's hard to build a crowd, you know. Because Hawaiian people see my act, and I don't do anything. I don't tease the different races.
Right.
I don't do anything like that. And the way I talk to them, I might as well be on Game of Thrones. You know what I mean? I sound I'm practically British to them the way I talk, you know, because I sound like someone from the mainland. So it's a really tough, interesting question you'd ask, because it's a really bizarre thing.
Oh, it's got to be just very, very difficult. Catherine doesn't know this. Andy, you don't know this either, but a Hawaiian is one of the reasons that I got in the business I got into and why you live the life you do.
What?
A guy named Aku Papuli.
Wow.
You know Aku, huh?
Yes, he was on
I never talked to you about that?
You mean
no,
King?
You didn't talk. He was on. He was the morning radio, When we went to school, my dad.
That's the true story.
My dad listened to him every morning, and he was huge. He was the market in
the
morning.
He was huge.
Nobody competed.
And I've never told you this story, have I?
I don't think so.
Aku Papuli, for years, just killed it in Hawaii, right? And I found out about him when I was like 15 or 14.
How would a little kid from Minneapolis
There
find
must have
out
been an article
this.
About him in the papers. He was so incredible. He was as dominant in Hawaii as the KQ Morning Show, from 1986 on. I mean, he was that dominant.
Mm-hmm.
So once I read the story about it, and it had to have been in the paper or some magazine or something. I mean, in North Minneapolis, I get to read about Aku. And some people, you know.
That's what I'm saying.
But anyway, I read about this guy and how dominant he was, and nobody stood a chance. And in 1967, I think it was. I mean, it goes back that far. Or maybe that's too early, but it's a long time ago, right? He was making $250,000 a year.
Wow.
That's how dominant
that was
he
huge.
Was. And I said, this guy has got it figured out, right? I want to do what he does the way he does
Say
it.
Say his name again.
Aku Papuli.
Aku Papuli 2 is what you
Yes, that's what I tried
to
be.
That's what you wanted to be.
I actually patterned my career after Johnny Carson from television and Aku Papuli from Hawaii, which everybody would, no one would ever guess.
I would never.
Are you talking about Hal Lewis?
Hal Lewis.
A.K.A. J. Aku Head Papuli.
Yep, that's him.
That's him.
It was an AM station in Hawaii.
Well, yeah, back then there was no AM. There was no AM. What years was he on, Andy?
Yeah, I guess
1965.
So it was 67, yeah.
Yeah.
65 to when?
He died in 83, so.
I think the show went to 70, about 77, I think.
77.
In 1977, he went off the air. Yeah,
his profile's a bit sparse.
What does it say? Does it say how much dough he was making in 19? Because 1967, they said he made $250,000 in 67. That's now like making,
How many people were living
$3 million
in Hawaii?
A year. Not that many, but everyone listened to Aku Papuli.
Yeah, I mean, it was the morning show. I mean, it was, and the conversations he would start would be the conversations all day.
Should find a clip.
He's making $1.7 million in today's money.
See, that's what I'm saying.
It's a lot of money.
That's I patterned my
smart
whole
guy.
Idea of doing morning radio. That's why people get pissed off at me, Brittany. You know. You met her the other day.
We were talking.
People get pissed off at me because I say to them, there are two people who know why the KQ Morning Show got as big as it did. And I would be one of them. And they go, oh, no, it's because we did it. I said, no, I've never told. And this is the first time I've ever told this story on the air. Well, it's great that you were here to tell, because I thought you and I talked about that before.
We haven't.
The reason that the KQ Morning Show is as successful as it is and has been for 29 years now is because I patterned it after I patterned my radio show the way after Aku Papuli. I just said I'm going to do it what he does, and it worked.
It
worked, man.
Here's the cool thing about it. As a kid, like, it wasn't really set for me. It was, you know, in 77 I was 10. But what he would do is every once in a while he would have these little comedy recordings that, you know, probably in the mainland you'd hear all the time, but we never heard there. And so he would find these odd, the thing about writing a letter from Camp Granada. Remember that old comedy bit?
Yep.
That little radio bit? He brought that on and people went nuts. And as a kid, I'm going, oh, this is hilarious. Yep. And so he had these little, he would do his serious talk radio stuff. My dad would be just completely listening on the way to school. But then he would play some comedy bit or some goofy radio, you know, thing that he'd find and play that. And then he'd play it a few times throughout the week. And so as a kid, you were listening too. Everybody had something for that show. It was designed that there was something for everything. And then there was a guy who would come in and do sports, and they'd chat. He would talk about sort of things. And this is before there were like stations that just had sports.
Right.
So this guy would come in. And he made that guy a celebrity in Hawaii because he would talk about sports for about 10 minutes. Like,
that's how it started. That's funny you bring that up, because that's what we did here is we, even though it was a classic rock station, we talked about sports, which nobody had ever done that before.
Right.
But that's the reason we did, is because Aku Papuli did it.
Wow.
That's crazy.
I've never mentioned that to you before. That's amazing. I just realized you never knew that.
Yeah. So we've even been to Hawaii and you never said anything.
Yeah, so you never, but you never like met him or went
never
over.
Never met him. I said the two guys, Johnny Carson and Aku Papuli, the thing that stuck out to me as a 15-year-old kid, 14-year-old, whatever I was it was never about them. Never about them. And that's why I just loved it. I thought it was a great idea.
Sound like you.
Oh, listen. See? Yeah. That's it. Right there.
Akupa Carson.
Akupa. It was Akupa. No, but I was fascinated. But just what you were talking about. It was about your dad driving to work was the important one, not
yes.
him.
Yes,
that's
absolutely.
The whole deal.
That's what it was. It was a discussion with you. Even though you weren't talking, it was a discussion with you. And my dad was a cop, and him and his buddies would be talking about that all day, and then he'd come home and talk to my mom about that topic. Mm-hmm. It was everyone's discussion.
That's exactly right. And that's what a cool moment for me in my life.
That's awesome.
Because I've never talked to anybody about it. I don't think I've ever told anybody this.
And because of my age, I mean, there's not too many people you could talk to now that would know who you're talking about. Because, I mean, he has been on the air now 30-something years.
30 years,
So,
isn't that cool?
That's awesome.
He lives today.
Great moment. He lives today.
This is true.
Andy, can you find any recordings?
That's probably going to be pretty difficult.
Yeah, well, it is.
Back in that day, they didn't save anything.
I don't know. There's a lot of radio archive heads out there that like to put
Aku.
All that.
Aku. A-K-U is one name.
Aku.
Aku.
Aku. Aku means fish, doesn't it?
Yes, it's a type of fish.
Yeah, Aku is a type of fish.
Aku.
Ahi is the one we all know from sushi. Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. And then Aku is a relative of ahi. And it was at the time more popular in Hawaii. I think there are not as many of them now, but... that was a popular fish in Hawaii.
Because at one time, and I don't know how long it lasted, but his nickname was Aku Head.
Yep.
Fish Head.
Yeah.
I just love that.
The Aku Head, yeah.
That sense of him bringing a huge community together where that's what you guys talk about. Like, once in a while, it happens a lot where people talk to me with something on the morning show. It feels good because it makes me think, there's this kind of bigger self kind of.
You can thank a guy who was. You weren't even born when he was on the air.
No, I wasn't.
Because I patterned it after him. I listened to as much as I possibly could and dug up everything I could find on him. Because I said, this is the way radio should be done.
Wow.
And nobody in the mainland had ever done radio that way.
Right.
It was always this kind of deal, and they were, I'm an announcer, and you need to listen to me. That's not how he did his show at all.
Yeah, that news background sort of stuff.
Dun, 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 dun.
He just kind of talked, and people listened.
At you.
You make a very good point, because he didn't have what we would know now, that sort of radio.
Not at all.
He didn't have, not just the voice, but he didn't have that cadence.
Nope.
He sounded like an uncle. That's, you know what I mean? He had kind of a little raspy voice.
Exactly,
and he would,
right.
And when he got annoyed by something, he'd just be annoyed. He wasn't, it wasn't like.
See, who's like that?
No!
Was he permanently annoyed?
You know what's so great about it is to talk to somebody who knows exactly what I'm talking about. And maybe that's why I've never brought it up to anybody before, because no one else would know what the hell I'm talking about.
How did you hear him? So he was on AM?
He was on AM, but it had to be a newspaper article or a magazine article. Maybe, I don't know what it was from.
So he didn't, you didn't hear him here?
No. But eventually, throughout the years, somebody would send me I just tried to find everything I could.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Wow.
Everything
amazing.
I could. Because he didn't have a radio voice. He wasn't all that, I'm so important and I'm just. It was just, hey, it's like you said, it's like talking to your uncle.
It was.
That's why I never used a radio voice. I've never done that radio cadence thing. Matter of fact, I just hate that. And I always did hate it. And Johnny Carson, same thing. He didn't do that. I'm the host of this show.
Right.
When you're on the show, you're the guest. You're the important one. Those two guys in my whole career, I patterned after them.
I agree. I mean, and the way Carson, he made everybody look interesting. And more interesting than probably were,
Yeah, absolutely.
For many people, And he was always so engaging, but never took it over. Like, he let them be. And then when he had to jump in, when he had to become the host, he was right there when he needed to be. But, man, he could bring so much out of guests. And you realize that was him doing that.
Amazing.
You know? Yeah.
Well, I stole it from my coon.
They're perfect.
The great thing about Carson, too, was when he did do bits, they weren't too long. They didn't go on and on forever. They weren't. I mean, they were silly and stupid, but that was the whole point. His bits were just, now people do bits. It's like, okay, stop it. You're losing
something. I should probably go on a speaking tour someday when I'm in my 80s to talk to young people, because a lot of young people think, there's no future in anything anymore, and I don't want to try anymore because the world is blah, 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 blah. But if a kid in North Minneapolis can come across a guy like Aku, there's this great – it was like a fantasy thing for me, literally. Instead of reading, Grimm's fairy tales or whatever, I want to know more about this guy. Because he does something completely different than everybody else and makes a goddamn ton of money. I just thought that was fabulous. And it came at the right time for me, because when I was 15, 16 years old, I had dropped out of high school and I stayed at home. I mean, I literally didn't leave my house other than, for a couple of minutes at a time for a year. And it was in that year that I studied Aku Papuli as much as I could possibly get, and I watched Johnny Carson every single night. And it formed in my brain what I wanted to do and how I wanted to do it, and it worked out. So, any young people listening, hey, find somebody that you admire that doesn't do it the way everybody else does it.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with
and
emulating
he means
people.
People under 40.
And I don't know where – and he got it from somewhere. Yes, somehow he heard somebody or whatever and figured, well, that's what I should do.
You know, emulation is a building block for creativity. I mean, it really is. You know, you don't have to feel like you have to do the whole path by yourself. I mean, you know, when you start doing comedy, it's the same way. You kind of become a little bit of an amalgam of your favorite comics. It's just that's natural.
Well,
it's kind of
you relate to them. Yeah.
And I remember at one point there was this guy who ran the open mic in Seattle, and he said, "When you stop doing Gary Shandling, you're going to do really well."
Well, you both have that laid back demeanor.
Yes. Yeah, and I said, "I don't do any of his jokes." He goes, "I'm not talking about his jokes. You're doing him." And I really that kind of hit me in the face. But I realized, I was a huge fan of Gary Shandling. You know, I remember in college I scraped together enough money to go see him at the Paramount Theater in Seattle. You know, and he was one of the only comics I really felt like I wanted to do that for. And so, when he said that, I realized, I was doing these little arm motions and I'd kind of move my head. You know what I mean?
Well,
I didn't mean to, but you are. So you are. But having these sort of role models kind of helps you kind of get started on a path. And then you kind of create your way beyond that.
And if they're not apparent to you, look for them. I got lucky. I happened to see an article about him. I don't even remember where the article appeared. I would assume it was in the Minneapolis newspaper. Because it was laying around everywhere when I was a kid. There were newspapers everywhere. Right. So you could be as poor, because I grew up extremely poor family. But even the poorest kid could find a newspaper because they were everywhere. Yeah. But so I got lucky and I found it at just the right time for me. It was just a very formative year in my life. It's just that I was really great that you were here the first time I ever told that story.
That's awesome.
Because no one else would understand. What the hell are you talking about? I don't have any idea what you mean by that. But you explained exactly what it was.
And the fact that you found an inspiration pre-internet on an island 7,000 miles away from you is amazing.
Yeah. No, it is. That's what's great about life is the information is all out there. Just go find it.
Yeah.
Whatever answer you need is out there. You got to go find it. And actually, I think the internet would have hurt that for me. I really do, because it would have been too accessible. It was, I think, what you just said is really important, because it was so important to me to find out. If it were on the internet, maybe it would have been that important.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a little treasure you found.
Yeah.
And then it's like you have it out there. That's like the goal, as opposed to on the internet, you'd be constantly looking at all the other people
at the
same stage. Like, oh, man, he's passed me by. You wouldn't be just like going for the top.
Right.
So it's like, you can't do that anymore.
God, but I saw those numbers. I mean, again, we're living in North Minneapolis and just dirt poor. I'm going, this guy talks for a few hours a day and makes $250,000 a year. Yeah.
And then hangs out on the beach.
And hangs out on the beach the rest of the time.
Yeah.
Surf solo.
He's done with work at 10 a.m. and he's in Hawaii.
Yeah. And Andy said, that's $1.8 million almost in today's dollars.
Wow.
Just huge dough living in paradise.
Not a bad gig.
I never moved to paradise. That's the part I missed out on. That's too bad.
Well, we do have a nice day.
Yeah, today's a nice day.
Yeah, this is true.
Today's a nice day.
I love that optimism of Minnesota. Today was great.
The
bike rental thing I had today, that cracks me up, because for 3 months, that's a great idea. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 3 months, yeah.
We don't talk about winter when it's not winter.
Are those bikes still out there the whole year?
No.
April through November.
That's
I think like Memorial Day. They were just brought out maybe 2-3 weeks ago.
I have to tell you this because you'll love this. Where I grew up is right over here in North Minneapolis. It's a very poor. And the bike racks. You saw with the green bikes. They're all in bike racks. I was driving through my old neighborhood about a year ago. And a year ago right now, as a matter of fact. And there's the bike rack. And it's empty. And there's police tape wrapped around it.
Oh, no.
Which means somebody stole all the bikes.
Oh.
It's like, that's really nice.
And that's probably later, like, well, here we go again.
Put the police taper all the way around it. The Rusty Gate and Bee Review video podcast on the Tom Bernard Network. The Rusty Gate and Bee Review is the entertaining show about entertainment. Rusty Gate and Bee will give you his opinion about upcoming movies, restaurants, music, or events, and will also feature in-studio guests. The Rusty Gate and Bee Review, find it at therustygateandbeereview.com. That's therustygateandbeereview.com on YouTube. Or on the Tom Bernard Network page. You don't have to do this all by yourself, and why would you want to? It's Tom Bernard here to talk to you about Sanvold & Associates Financial Services Group. Terry Sanvold has been helping people just like you all over the country to get their next financial level for over 27 years now. And that's a lot of experience. And he's joined us here on the Tom Bernard Podcast Network with his Money Talk Show, streaming live Mondays at 2 p.m. Terry and his team will help you review your finances and investments every quarter. Make sure you're organizing your short-term, mid-range, and long-term money. Evaluate options if you've left a job and a 401k behind someplace. Help you understand not only how to accumulate dollars for the future, but he will also show how you spend your dollars in a more cost-effective way in retirement. Call Sandvold and Associates for a no-cost, no-obligation review or second opinion. Terry's mission is to earn your business every time he talks with you. When was the last time you talked with your financial advisor? Call 952-544-2837. That's 952-544-2837. Go online to helpmeterry.com. That's help me get away from Catherine while she's flagging her hands on trying to read a commercial. No, it's help me, Terry. One word, helpmeterry.com.
Help me, Terry.
This is my life, Kermit. Just being attacked nonstop by my own
talking
wife.
About North Minneapolis. I've gotten too comfortable driving through there, apparently.
Yeah, all
that's window,
not, you don't
I had my
do
windows
that.
Down today, and there was this guy in front of me, and he was, like, talking on the phone, and the light was...
Oh, God.
Was, and so I said, just go through the fucking light. And he heard me. He starts making the trigger sign out his window.
Oh, my God.
I'm he like, did? Really? You're going to shoot me because I said, go through the fucking light? Really? I felt like pulling over and having a
just even
talk.
Talking about, yeah, like...
pulling over and having a
let's
talk.
Let's be real.
What a great idea that would have been.
I'm like, really?
If he was really that crazy, he would have showed you the gun. So I'd have been like, hey, yeah, I have two.
Yeah, and he like waited for me to go through another intersection because he was taking a left and he went like that at me again. I'm like, oh my God.
You should have been like this, like you went to a shotgun.
Grenade.
I would say this. Driving the car that you drive in my old neighborhood and saying, just fucking do anything is not a good
idea. I know. I know.
I mean, the car.
I normally am very like, I keep my head down and I just don't look at anybody, you know, even when they're like making comments or whatever. I'm like, oh, don't, can't tell.
I don't know
any trouble here.
About.
No trouble, please.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, I just got too comfortable today because it was so nice out.
Yes, the one nice day, Kermit. I mean, we had the one nice day here. It's absolutely amazing.
I know that you relax
it's
and then
you get gun
signs.
Beautiful day for swearing, isn't it?
Apparently for her. Apparently for Catherine, it is.
And
yes.
Calling out threats, yeah.
Yeah, threatening people, all the rest of it.
Yeah.
I had to have a talk with Catherine many, many years ago because she would go berserk in the car. And she'd be pointing at people and honking at people.
I do not have that Hawaiian attitude in the car.
No, she does not. And I said, honey, you do realize that you're giving the finger and screaming fuck off to people. There are four guys in the car, and I'm the one that's going to have to get out and fight all four of them if they get pissed off. You do know that, right?
Yep.
I get to get out and slug it out with these guys
oh,
while you're in the
right.
car.
What are they going to do? Hit me?
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
That's exactly right. I'm going to hit you. I'm out there so getting pummeled.
Oh, you would have negotiated something. How much does this mean for you to walk away, sir?
Yeah. Let me write a check to you.
I've lost more watches this way.
Just take your watch off and stroll away. Honest to God, it's just, I was talking to Kermit on Wednesday about, you've been in 47 states, you said.
Yes.
And the three he has not been to were Vermont and New Hampshire, and we couldn't figure out what the live comedy audiences would be like in New Hampshire
no,
and Vermont
I
either.
Don't know what that would be.
And what was the other one?
West Virginia.
West Virginia, that's right.
That's a good one to miss.
That's got to be tough out there, too. Well, you better be finding a Hawaiian son of a bitch. You know where those deals going. You don't need that. Oh, God. I can't remember who it was many, many years ago. A Caucasian stand-up comedian played the Apollo Theater. And he said it was unbelievably intimidating to be a white guy because he walks out on stage and the guy sitting front row center looks up and he's like 7 feet away. He goes, you better be funny, motherfucker.
I can't imagine being like a janitor there. Just the idea is just so intimidating. They're aggressive.
Oh, yeah.
A friend of mine is a very funny comic, but he's just your really white guy. He's got that, he's got that curly kind of Ralph Malph hair really white skin. So he sees an ad in the paper. He lives in San Francisco. He sees an ad in the paper, and it says comedy competition tonight in Oakland. So he goes over and he walks in the club.
Speaking of tough crowds,
and it's an all black club. So the bouncer kind of looks at him and he goes, "Excuse me, I understand there's a comedy competition. Said there's open signups. Can I sign up?" And the bouncer just looks at him and kind of moves to the side so he can see in the room. You know, like doesn't say anything. He just moves to kind of and he goes, "You wanna come be in this?" And he's trying to be like the boss is trying to. He's not saying like maybe you shouldn't. So
he's not trying to be racist.
Right.
Yeah. So going out of his way.
Right. So he goes. I'd like to. I mean, is it open to anyone? And he goes. Let me get the guy who was running the competition. Right. So the guy comes out, and it's almost the same look. Everybody has this look at his face. Like they look at him and they go, "Yes, may I help you?"
Astonishment.
So he goes. Well, you know, I read the thing in the paper. I saw the ad, and I thought I'd come down. And so he goes, "Okay, if you want to sign up." So he signs up. So I think there's like three comics on before him, and it was funny because the host comes up and just say things and you get used to kind of saying things, and he goes, "All right, the next comic's very funny, brother," and he goes, "A very funny comedian," right? So here's where I love this story. So he introduces Steve. Steve comes up. He's got a piece of paper in his hand, and he's looking at it. And so there's kind of a clap. Like it's not like they stopped clapping. You know what I mean? They clapped, and he came up, and he kind of paused, and then the clap went down. It got really quiet, and he's staring at this piece of paper. And finally he goes, "Oh, left on Main."
I bet you they cracked him off.
They fell out laughing. They
I bet the room just broke.
And then he did his act and did really well. And he made the semifinals.
That's
like
wild.
He did? He was one of the – they took the top five from the three nights to the semifinals. So they took 15 to the semifinals. So I go, "So how'd the semifinals?" He goes, that opening joke you can't do over again.
Yeah. But he did that one.
So he didn't have like another opener like that, you know. And so it didn't go as well as the semifinals. But he killed – I mean that one line killed the whole thing. And they just – they loved
the
it.
Ice or whatever.
Traveling around 47 states, we talked about you can't do the same type of humor in Hawaii for the tourists and the natives. How do you know when you go to certain states how you're going to approach your own act?
You start with the most relatable, right? So I talk about being from Hawaii pretty close to the top because that's something that, like, they don't know about me. Mm-hmm. They might find it interesting, so those jokes. And then I talk about my name because – The bit is about getting teased and with my name in school. And the good thing about that is that it sort of reminds them of my name so they can remember if they decide to look me up. Yep. You know, because so many times you watch a comic, you don't remember who the name of the person, you know.
Yeah. That's true.
And then – but the other part of it is, too, is that people can all relate to being teased in school. We all can relate to, you know, being picked on or whatever. And or if you're the guy who picked on people, you can relate to that too. You know what I mean? So there's a relationship to that, and it sort of is the basis of my humor. My name and learning to laugh at myself is the basis of what I do. So it sort of sets that up, and so things like that. So when I talk about, you know, marriage, you know, try and be relatable, and then if you can get them on those things, then you start to move off a little bit off the trunk of the tree. Just get a little bit onto the branches. If they go, you go it. But I always try and be as relatable as possible. At the top, you know, because no matter where we're from, we all have fear, we all have embarrassment, we all love our kids, we all know what love is like, we know what breakup is like, you know what I mean? So there are things that we can sort of build on and then kind of go from there.
And, absolutely.
And there are times, man, there's some gigs where you go out on the branches and you go, "All right, that was a bad idea." You know?
Back to the tree.
Want to hear about this.
they're not doing anything. Back to the tree. Yeah, exactly.
Back there, yeah.
No, it's that's always fascinated me, going from – because I got to believe you go on USO tours. That's also – I mean, Brittany, did you ever see a USO show?
Oh, yeah.
That's got to be a whole different thing.
What was that? The one they call Fluffy. I sound like a
The Gabriel
one they
Iglesias.
Call
yeah,
Fluffy.
Gabriel, yeah.
Bring him to me. First off, you have this weird resentment when they come because they're like acting as if this is exhausting. For, you know, like, I mean, they don't, you know what I mean? If they show any sign of like any sign of I'm tired or this or that, we're like, I've been here a year, bitch. Yeah. Like, yeah. So you already have this animosity because you could just tell they're, you know, they wear like a military hat. Right. They think that they're like, we're like, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like I saw so much where I'm like, I hate him. I hate him so much right now. But that fluffy guy, he was so funny because, I mean, he kind of tailored his jokes to what was going on. So you could tell he was actually thinking about it. And he's like, you know what? Iraq needs a new marketing. That's all they need. He's like, you ever go to the beach and you got nowhere to sit? He's like, this is miles and miles of sand. Beach excluded. Like, water excluded. Like, you know, and it was like, okay, I like it. But, yeah, that USO, I mean, that can be – we already go into it being like, did you eat did you eat McDonald's recently? We can tell, you know?
Because you haven't had it in a bit?
Actually, yeah. It's definitely, yeah. Did you ever do a USO?
No, but I never thought of that angle, you know? But and, you know, on behalf of my whole species of entertainer, comedians are very whiny. We just we can't
so
help
soldiers,
it.
No.
So sorry.
Kidding, not at all.
But in the situation you guys are in, you have reason to be. You know what I mean?
I just think it's such a fine line they have to walk, you know, and you see those, so much country that came that were, you know, and you have to appreciate, I mean, they obviously don't have to do this, but again, like, they definitely are walking a very fine line.
But here's my problem with sometimes with comedians. If you take a gig where you think you're going to perform, where you think you're going to perform in a theater in the downtown of a city, and then you're in a tent in Iraq, then maybe you can whine.
Yeah.
But you took this gig. What did you think it was going to be? You know what I mean? And that's where and it's not just with USO, but there are a lot of places around comedy where comedians will take the gig and then whine about the money or the setup and everything. How did this surprise you?
And I think it's kind of like what you're saying, like that breaking the ice. I think if you don't acknowledge it, it might be even worse to be like, this is great here, you know, because it's kind of like it's you haven't been here on Wednesday. Or, like, you know what I mean? Like, you get mad where you're like, yeah, it's great for 5 minutes. So it's almost kind of like you said, like the guy who broke the ice. It's like, wow, this place is a shithole. But you say it in a funny way, not like, why? Like, you guys pee in that thing?
Right,
are you
right, exactly.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I like doing. You know, and I haven't done USO, but I've done a lot of bases here stateside. And I remember one time I said, and there was a lot of jokes and I won't do for you here, but the basic premise of the thing is I said, you know what's amazing is to when you're in a room and you just know that you're the one person that if anything goes down, you're the one person that has no idea what to do. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I told him that. I go, if something happened, like each of you knows what's going to happen immediately. And one of you is probably going to grab me and do what's supposed to be done.
Your body man.
Right. And I said, I'm just going to sit here and pee myself. That's what I'm – that's my goal, my job here. And so by making – and I made a bunch of jokes about that. And by making those jokes, they realize I knew where I was. I understand it. And I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be with people that are trained, that know – I mean, almost to a point of second nature what to do if something happens right now. And that to me was my angle, like the angle of, like, you know, whining that the gig's not what you thought it was going to be or whatever. Like, come on, these people, like you said, these people have been here a year.
Yeah, you know? I think that's probably amazing to be able to do that, because we definitely had people you just wanted to, like, walk away. So I think that's amazing that you have some aspect of that, because, yeah, that's really neat.
Yeah. Sometimes we forget there's an audience. You know what I mean? Like, we're so
Yeah. No question. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight, tomorrow night at Acme, one of the great comedy clubs in your favorite.
Yeah, my favorite comedy club. It's wonderful.
It is just
wonderful,
fantastic. Kermit Apio will be there tonight and tomorrow at Acme, 8 and 10:30 both nights, correct?
Yes.
Wonderful to talk to you again. And thank you for being the conduit to get my Aku Papuli story out. Aku Papuli is a guy. I just realized I never brought that up before.
So awesome, man.
Great.
You know, I've always appreciated you having me on the show, and I appreciate you having me on the podcast. And then to hear something like that really connects to my childhood is amazing.
Yeah, thank God you knew who he was.
Yeah, because nobody else would
Everybody did. Everybody at that time knew who he was. Everybody listened.
Thank you for listening. Have a great day.